I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you have a collection of scars?
I have a handful.
There are people out there who are braving 2,000-degree heat, handling unwieldy tools, avoiding showers of sharp shards, things that you would imagine dealing with on a trip to Mordor.
They're not from Middle Earth, though. As a matter of fact, a few of them are in upstate New York at the Corning Museum of Glass. And by the way, the people we're talking about are glass makers. And we just heard from one of them, Eric Meek.
Meek is the senior manager of hot glass programs at the museum, and he's a longtime glass blower. Our listeners might have seen him on Netflix's Blown Away, the first ever competition show for glassmakers.
Because why not, right? Eric and I chatted about glassmaking, all about it, and why it is one of the most offbeat art forms around.
Not only is the art form itself uniquely challenging, but the glasswork on display at the Corning Museum, you know, they're sometimes out of this world. And following the recent release of the fourth season of Blown Away, people can now see pieces from the show at the museum.
All right, that's one of our producers, Lauren, and I'm your host, Mike Rogers. This is Something Offbeat.
So we're in a little town in western New York State called Corning, and the museum has been here. We're nearing 75 years. So the museum was founded in 1951.
So any questions I might have about glass, you're the guy.
I'm the guy. That's all roads lead to Corning. Involved in a lot of crazy things like Blown Away, because when people have questions about glass, they usually find us.
How do you make glass? I mean, if I want to make something out of glass, what are the raw materials?
This is one of the things that I think is so fascinating about glass, is that you start out with the most humble of ingredients. So, you know, you ask most kids in elementary school what glass is made out of, they're going to say it's made out of sand. And we do take a very pure sand called silica, along with a couple other ingredients, soda ash and limestone, most commonly. And you heat those up over 2,000 degrees and it becomes glass. So take really common stuff, get it really hot, and you make glass.
Where do you get the silica?
It comes from a lot of different places. Like, you literally could take sand off of a beach, but that often has a lot of things in it other than the silicon dioxide, the silica sand that we need. So most commonly, it's mined out of the earth. I know there are mines in Michigan, there are mines in Washington State, there are mines in North Carolina that provide silica for the glass industry.
Tell me a little bit about the history of glass making. Is this something that was discovered by accident?
Almost certainly. Yeah, almost certainly. Unfortunately, it predates written history. So glass has been made by man for nearly 4,000 years. So for a very long time, predating written history. It's been formed on a blowpipe for about 2,000 years. So the techniques you see in Blown Away, where you inflate glass on a pipe, has been around about 2,000 years. Almost certainly an accident. However, we know that there were circumstances where people back then were using high temperatures, mostly to fire ceramics. And if you're making ceramics, you have a lot of the same ingredients for making glass. People have made and fired ceramics for over 10,000 years. So, you know, it wasn't like a point in history. All of a sudden, glass was discovered and used broadly. I think it was evolved over time, and it evolved to the point where you could inflate it by pipe. And it's continued to evolve since then.
Before glass blowing came along, what was it? Did they just pour it out in a sheet?
They would press it into molds, and they did something called core forming, where they would wrap strands of this sticky, gooey glass around a core and then pick out the core, and they would make a vessel that way. And believe it or not, I think early glass was most commonly used to mimic naturally occurring materials like quartz, like rock crystal, like lapis, coral, turquoise. So they were sort of imitating those semi-precious stones and other things.
I was looking through the exhibits on display at the Corning Museum right now, and one of them caught my eye. It's called 35 Centuries of Glass. One of the oldest pieces in the exhibit is a portrait of an Egyptian pharaoh, and it also includes a full-scale model of an Egyptian furnace.
And Meek confirmed to me that glass was probably discovered by accident. I wonder what sort of mistakes had to happen in one of those furnaces that resulted in the glass we have today.
Speaking of mistakes, there are also videos of all types of glass-blowing projects on that Corning Museum website where I saw the exhibits. They're so cool, but they make me nervous. I would love to learn how to do glass making, but I can't imagine doing it without getting some major burns and injuries.
I'll tell you, I worked in college, all through college, in the cafeteria at one of the biggest dorms on campus. So I graduated with more cuts and burns than I could possibly count. But glass burning, I might draw the line there.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
How long does it take to master the art of glass blowing?
To say a lifetime, right? One could say that. But I think, you know, what we find here at the museum, there are a lot of people coming through here on their journey of learning how to make glass for a lot of different reasons. And what we find is that if you've been making glass less than 5 or 6 years, the glass probably has a big say in what it becomes. You know, the craftsperson needs 5 or 6 years to be able to really take an idea in their mind and make it real, without letting the material dictate somewhat how it looks.
Physically, what's required? A lot of lung power, I would guess.
Well, I think this is one of those things that might fall under misconceptions, and that is that it takes a tremendous amount of lung power to blow glass. It only does if you're doing it wrong. So when glass is hot, it's really, really, really soft. You know, it's easier than blowing up bubble gum, right? But when you're first starting, it's really difficult to control hot glass, right? So when you're starting out, everything takes more effort, more strain, because you can't work with the material when it's hot, because you have to be fluid and keep moving just like the material. So it doesn't really take a lot of lung power. But, you know, I think physically, the physicality of the art is something that really engages a lot of people with it. It's something that you don't have to be strong, but it is a physical process, and it engages your body.
How hot is the glass, and how rapidly does it cool?
So the glass always starts out from the furnace around 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So you pull the molten glass from the furnace at 2,000 degrees, and it's like a ticking clock, right? If you have, as the glass cools, it solidifies. So you have a range between about 2,000 degrees and 1,000 degrees where the glass is malleable and you can shape it. Now, through that range, it has a whole range of consistencies, right? So it goes from something that's like honey to something that's hard and brittle through that span of 1,000 degrees. And how long does it take to go through that span? It depends on how thick the glass is. So if it's a very thick, massive piece of glass, you might have a couple of minutes to shape it. If it's really, really thin, you might have 10 seconds to shape it. And it goes through that temperature range in that 10 seconds.
Interesting. Yeah, gee, it's like you said, the clock is definitely ticking.
Yep.
The name of this show is Something Offbeat. I think this qualifies. In terms of art forms, this qualifies.
Yep, absolutely. No, I think a lot of glassmakers are first and foremost fascinated by the material and the physicality and just the fact that it's always changing. You know, it's not like a piece of oak where if you're shaping and you're making something out of wood, you come back 3 days later and it's exactly the same. Every moment you're engaging with glass, it changes. And so it's definitely offbeat in its own.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The process of glassmaking is actually pretty offbeat itself. But glass itself, that's part of everyone's lives.
Right. From the mirror you get ready in front of to the windows in your car, even the screen of your smartphone.
Got a funny feeling that you're teeing up a trivia question here, so I'm going to beat you to it. I ask you a question. How much glass, Lauren, is produced around the world every year?
Sneaky. But I do have an answer. According to the International Year of Glass report from 2022, 209 million tons of glass are produced annually. And that figure doesn't even include art and specialty glasses.
You're really fast on that Google thing.
It's interesting because we've been talking about an individual blowing glass. But when you get to things like wine bottles and just about anything, you get into mass production. What kind of machinery is involved in that?
The neat thing about glass and industry is that every machine that forms glass is based on the same principles of shaping glass by hand. So the principles really translate. There's a machine. A machine was invented over 100 years ago in 1903 called the Owens Bottle Machine. It was invented in Toledo, Ohio, and it was the first machine to blow glass completely automatically. So it could take a gob of glass, inflate it, shape it into a wine bottle completely automatically. So that was over 100 years ago already. So we've experienced a long swath of history where glass has been completely automated. So beer bottles and peanut butter jars and light bulbs and all those things are made automatically.
I was interested in this. I read that you currently have an exhibit on the way glass interacts with wine. I didn't know it interacted at all. Does it alter the wine in any way?
No, it's not really how it interacts with the wine. It's just how glass and wine have been paired together, since glass has been invented. So just in terms of, we have decanters and vessels that stored wine 2,000 years ago. So as soon as people were blowing glass, they made things to put wine in. And there are a lot of uses for glass apparatus and making and testing wine. So it's really just about the symbiotic relationship of glass and wine. Like wine would be a different thing to experience out of a ceramic cup or a plastic cup than it is to experience out of a glass. So it's just explores that relationship.
Glass also has utilitarian uses, such as wine bottles, and artistic uses, too.
Right, and glass art is the focus of Blown Away, which debuted on Netflix in 2019. 10 artists compete for a chance to win a prize package worth $100,000 every season.
All right, you mentioned Blown Away. Talk about the show a little bit. This has really brought a new level of awareness to glass making, hasn't it?
It sure has. Yep. So Blown Away, they just launched their fourth season. It's a product of a studio up in Toronto, Canada. And they, like we talked about earlier, they came to Corning when they had the concept for this show and, asked us what we thought of it and if there's any expertise or advice that we could lend. And so we had a long discussion, but it is definitely a product of this studio called Marvel Media. They film it up in Canada. And like you say, it's brought a spotlight on glass making and glassmakers like really never before.
Besides the lung power, are there any misconceptions about glassmaking that you can clear up?
We hear it all here at the museum. At the museum, we demonstrate glassmaking every day, and our guests are coming in and out of the shop and asking all kinds of fun questions. Like you said, the first one is, do you have to have a lot of lung power? So we talk about that one a lot. Another one is, how often do you get burned? Because you're working around something that's 2,000 degrees. But, naturally, if it's something that is your profession, just like a cook in a kitchen, you have to learn to work safely and learn what to be aware of and what to stay away from.
What's your favorite display in the museum? The weirdest thing in there?
The most common reaction to our museum is, I had no idea. For being in a small town in upstate New York, this is a museum that would be at home in any major city. We have a huge collection, the largest collection of glass in the world. And as you say, in that collection are some real gems, some really amazing pieces. I certainly have some favorites. And my favorite is always the 200-inch disc. So Corning Incorporated, back before World War II, created the largest piece of cast glass in the world, which was a light gathering mirror for the telescope on Mount Palomar. And that they made two of them. And the one that didn't turn out has been in the museum collection and on display since 1951. So it's kind of the centerpiece of our collection. And it's an amazing object. And it's an amazing testament to perseverance, because this thing broke and they made it again, and it's still being used out in California on Mount Palomar.
I'm Mike Rogers. Thanks so much for listening to Something Offbeat. This episode written and produced by Lauren Barry and Chris Blake. Audio editing by Bree Flores. Original music by Myron Kaplan and editorial support from Cooper Mall. To keep listening, please subscribe to us on the Odyssey app or Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you got your own offbeat story you think we should cover, let us know about it. Send it to us at somethingoffbeat@Odyssey. That's AUDACY.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.